everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's April 2025, and you are listening to episode 440, which is a very spoiler-filled conversation about the new Disney live-action film, Snow White. Today's guest is Anne Kennedy. She has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry or Worn Out People, and blogs about current events and theological trends on her Substack, Demotivations with Anne. Anne has written a film review for her ongoing column for the Christian Research Journal, which is called Theological Trends, and her article is called Reimagining Snow White, How Counterfeits Reveal the True. And you can read her review for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Anne, it's good having you on the podcast again.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, we're turning to Anne once again to do a film review for us. Previously, she had reviewed Conclave for us, and now we're talking about the film that is in theaters now, although I don't know for how much longer, and it's the live-action remake of the classic animated Disney film Snow White. So I don't know if some of the younger kids these days knew about that old classic film that was a favorite of so many. So how did this particular new live action film come into being? And what was the process? Why did they decide to make a classic film into a live action movie?
It seems to be something that Disney is doing. The first one, I think, was years ago with Cinderella. And so then there was, I think, The Lion King. Actually, I haven't seen any of the remakes, the live-action remakes, except for Cinderella and now Snow White. I'm not sure how I managed to work that out for myself, but they've been slowly working through the whole Disney canon. And this seems to be one of the sort of, you know, pinnacle. I think it should be the pinnacle of this effort because it was the first movie to make Disney into the sort of powerhouse that it has become. I was just looking it up and it looks like they began to talk about it in 2016, but Rachel Zegler wasn't cast until it looks like around 2021. So it's been kind of very slowly moving along. And then they reshot, of course, from 21 until now. They had a couple of major rewrites, in part because of things that Zegler said. So it's been a slow process. I imagine they thought that it would be, you know, one of the sort of the culmination of all these live action remakes. But it hasn't turned out that way at all.
Well, just in case our listeners don't know, the beloved classic was first released in 1937, which basically was almost 100 years ago. So it's, you know, this is a big move to make a almost 100-year-old film into a live-action movie. Now, you might have heard Anne talking about Rachel Zegler, and she was originally in West Side Story by Steven Spielberg several years ago, which also had a huge backlash and brouhaha. And now it seems like this film is gaining that. So who is she? You just mentioned she was cast, and she's been cast as the main character, Snow White.
Yes, she's quite young. She is in her 20s, it looks like. She kind of made it big with the West Side Story. She was in a lot of musicals in high school. Her father is Polish, which is where her last name comes from, and her mother is Colombian. So she kind of has some interesting ethnic views on the world. But after the West Side Story, she has been in Shazam, The Fury of the Gods, which I didn't see. She was in The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and it looks like she's been on Broadway a few times. But it was really this getting this role of Snow White was a big deal, or it would have been for anyone. But I think really what she's become known for is saying things on social media that makes Disney look really bad. That's probably her most important biographical detail that people are talking about today.
So you mentioned that, unfortunately, she's been now in two films that have suffered from major controversies, and it seems like there is quite a bit of controversy, mainly surrounding a number of things, but also what you noted, her commentary on social media. So what is the backlash that is kind of overshadowed, I think, the film itself? Because I think more people are covering the backlash to the film than the film.
Yes. I mean, when I went to see it, we went as a group to do that horrible thing that people say. We went on purpose to hate watch the movie. And my daughter wanted to see it, not because she wanted to see it, but because she thought it would be awful. And so we were really the only people in a very big empty theater. But I was listening to somebody recently who said there really isn't almost anybody in the world who hasn't heard of her at this point. I don't know if that's true or not, but she kind of jumped over the niche Hollywood people who pay attention to those kinds of things. And average people who don't watch movies have heard of her and have probably have an opinion. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Some of the things that she's, well, the first thing that made her famous in terms of Snow White was in early press junkets, I think, where she was being interviewed at different events along with, I think it's Gal Gadot. I hope I'm saying that right. I've heard different pronunciations of her name. And the fascinating thing that...
And by the way, for our listeners, Gal, she plays the wicked stepmother, the evil stepmother in the movie.
In the movie, yes. There's quite a height difference between Zegler and Gadot. So that's interesting. And I thought, you know, visually, they look really great together. And it could have been an amazing film, I think, if it had been written better. But this is where I feel bad for Zegler. I think she thought when she spoke out, when she was asked what the film was going to be like, I don't think she thought she was saying anything controversial at all. There's clips of her saying, you know, that the old version is creepy and scary and out of date. And so Disney wanted to freshen it up and make it a little more relevant, in particular to have Snow White not be looking for true love, but to become the leader she knows she can be. That's the phrase that has gone around the world many times. And got a lot of pushback. People objected to that. And I think I feel bad for probably Disney and Zegler because clearly they didn't expect it to be a backlash. They didn't expect controversy from saying something like that. I think they thought they were saying something completely mainstream. And I think that's a fair assumption because we have, as a cultural kind of accepted or acquiesced to the idea of that women should be in every sphere of life, that they should have all the jobs that men can have, only have them better. And what with the, you know, the vaunted diversity, equity, and inclusion talk that people, we've just kind of come to live with. And people who objected to that didn't, you know, have a lot of cultural cachet all this time. And so I think they were really taken by surprise that a lot of people just don't want that story. So I feel sorry for them, honestly. The ground shifted and they, I don't think, have known what to do about it. And they probably don't understand why people's minds have changed. Or if they, I don't know if they, people's minds have changed so much as that they, that idea reached saturation point and people finally felt comfortable enough to say, we don't actually like it. So it's been fun to watch the backlash, much more fun than to watch the actual movie.
Well, there's another aspect of the film that was controversial, and that had to do with the depiction of the Seven Dwarves in CGI, as opposed to using real actors who were little people. And so tell us a little bit about that controversy, because it seems like this film could not catch a break. It was one thing after another.
Yes, this was very exciting too, because before anybody knew much about it, Peter Dinklage, who's a very famous actor, I think he was in Game of Thrones. That's what I've read.
Yes, he's in Game of Thrones.
He was in Game of Thrones. He criticized Disney for even wanting to make the movie in the first place. And I think they then took that to heart and were not going to have dwarves as characters, CGI or otherwise. They had a cast, a band of bandits in the woods that they replaced the dwarves with. Well, then a picture of that emerged and they were roundly mocked. I saw them called, you know, a band of seven baristas was what people were saying online. And so they didn't get rid of those characters, but they added, it seems from watching the movie, CGI dwarves back in with the classic song that people are so familiar with. But the CGI dwarf situation, I agreed with those on this point, was creepy. I found it really very uncomfortable, kind of uncanny valley dwarf situation. And it didn't fit in to the movie. That's one of the places where they tried to make it feel more traditional after the, you know, the feedback they got from Zegler's media junkets. And so it has this patchy feel to it in terms of messaging, but also visually the dwarf parts of the movie don't feel like they fit. And then you ended up still having the bandits. So it was a pretty interesting movie experience.
And also to add on to that, Peter Dinklage is himself a little person. And so he's actually in the film uncredited, and he was quite vocally against this film. So it's very interesting.
We would like to hear from you, and as I've mentioned before and want to remind you, we have an email address where you can send ideas for the podcast and give us letter to the editor, and it's called response@equip.org, and please contact us there to give us input about this podcast and the different topics that we cover. So you have anything that fits into the subject matter that we cover, we definitely want to hear from you. Now, we'd also like to hear from you by having you partner with us in a couple of ways. One is you could give us a tip, you know, as we don't have any subscriptions anymore. And so if you want to help us out as we continue to produce this podcast, as well as our articles for which we do pay our writers, we would love it if you consider giving us a tip, something small, kind of like the equivalent of if you went out for a cup of coffee, maybe $5 or $10, you can do that at equip.org. Go to journal, click on that, and go to Postmodern Realities, click there. And at every single one of our landing pages, you will find a link where you could give us a tip. The other way that you can partner with us is just to get the word out. Tell a friend, post your favorite episodes or recent episodes on your social media accounts. And of course, we always welcome your reviews, a starred review or some short sentences about what you enjoy about this podcast to help other people check us out. And we would be very grateful for that if you would do that on Apple Podcasts. So thanks for all the ways that you partner with us and just for listening to this podcast. We want more and more people to hear about it so that Christians can be equipped to know what they believe, why they believe it, and how to respond to the latest challenges that we see in our culture. So speaking of the latest things in our culture, kind of on the mind of the internet, we are back to our conversation with Ann Kennedy about Snow White from Disney Studios. Well, we kind of talked about just the various different controversies surrounding the film, but I want to actually talk about the film itself, because maybe our listeners know, maybe they don't know, that Snow White is actually a fairy tale that didn't start with Disney, but rather with some classic fairy tales written by two brothers. They're called the Grimm's brothers. And these fairy tales were written in between 1812 and 1815. And it's a whole set of fairy tales, probably some very famously known ones. And one of those is Snow White. And also, we have talked about it many decades ago in the Christian Research Journal. We've published about fantasy and fairy tales and how those can be a really good vehicle for Christian themes and Christian theology. So now I want to talk a little bit about the actual content of the film or what it was based on, because originally, way back, you know, hundreds of years ago, it was really based on Christian theology. So there are definitely, in this particular film, kind of two different competing narratives. So what are those?
Well, the film, so the I do encourage people to go read the old fairy tale because it's wonderfully told. The pacing of that story literally is just beautiful. And it has repetition that's so important for children and just in terms of good storytelling. There's lots of different sevens. There's three things that happen to Snow White, not just the apple, but the evil queen tries to get at her three different times and makes a long journey and refers to back to the mirror on the wall. And so there's a lovely pacing, and then there's really kind of some nice Christology. The prince, she really does seem to, she does die. And the prince who comes in at the end kind of raises her from the dead. The poison apple falls out of her mouth and she kind of has a resurrection rather than just sort of a waking up. And there's a lot of beautiful imagery with the apple and the snow and the blood and the wood of the spinning wheel and, you know, dark and light and the good and evil. And then the care of the dwarves. Some people have said that, you know, in the castle, she's sort of in Eden, and then she goes out into the world, and the dwarves are sort of represent the church age in the world. And then, you know, there's this, the parousia, the resurrection of the dead at the last day. So there's just a nice arc and shape to the original. So I think that Disney could have probably kept a better arc, but they just didn't, I don't think they knew how to do that because they wanted to, their main paradigm, I think, their underlying structure was that of female empowerment, which is a theme that is in many modern movies, that the female protagonist, heroine, is got to find herself. She's got to discover something about who she is, and that will be her salvation arc. So she goes from knowing that there's something that she is, but she's not quite sure. And then she has to find that. And sometimes there's some trial that she undergoes, but not always. Sometimes it's definitely a Mary Sue situation where the female lead doesn't suffer in any way through the narrative. So Snow White, in this case, they had the female empowerment, self-discovery narrative as a foundation point right away in the beginning of the film. She gets her name not because of the sort of prayer of her mother for a beautiful child, but because she's born in a snowstorm. And the mother doesn't figure in much. In the original, there's no mention of the king, really. In the new Snow White needs to find out who she really is and who her father knows she can be. That's a phrase that returns a lot. The father disappears in war. So she's on a quote journey of self-discovery, but there's not a lot of ways for her to do that in the film. She just sort of easily falls into the right space. And then there's some singing. And then they mash in the true love's kiss narrative. But that lacks coherence too, because it doesn't really have the sort of deep Christian feel that I think makes a lot of really good movies, even when they don't know they're being sort of Christian adjacent, if they have that narrative arc of fall and then redemption in some way or other. That's what makes a good movie and a good story. They don't have that because they hadn't planned to do with that, as far as I can tell. So yes, she's supposed to discover herself, but she doesn't really, because she doesn't suffer in any way, even though it's all supposed to be suffering. They just really don't pull it off. But those are the two competing messages, sort of female empowerment versus love, falling in love with a prince. And the two really don't go together in ordinary life. And on the screen, it's quite jarring.
It's almost like the prince is really tangential to this story and their new take of it, which, as you mentioned, underwent a whole bunch of rewrites, because what they're trying to do is, or I think that they're trying to do, is frame perhaps this story in a different way. Instead of being rescued by the prince with true love's kiss when she, you know, has this crisis, she instead finds her true calling to be the leader of her entire people. And so she's the one who's empowered and the leader. But just the narrative of the original story, it just doesn't seem to fit into what the point is. So how is this different than the original? Is it trying to be so starkly different? Like you said, it is jarring because some of the original themes or story plot lines don't even seem to fit into this new paradigm of, we want to make this point about females being good leaders.
Yeah, I mean, the original was, I thought probably very pro-woman, you know, except that there is the prince who comes along and rescues her at the end. But unless you think that women being rescued in any way is anti-woman, I don't, you know, then I guess you would really not enjoy that, which I think this sort of women can accomplish whatever they want to do on their own without any help is a very important part of our, what has been a cultural assumption for us over the last 10 years, at least, I guess, maybe longer. So in the original one, she is helped, you know, there's the bad queen who's jealous and wicked and kind of engages in magic. But Snow White is helped by the dwarves. It's interesting. She makes a kind of contract with them that she'll keep house for them and they'll protect her. So it's very traditional, I guess. And the queen intrudes on that and sort of dupes Snow White three times and almost kills her the final time. So she's easily deceived, which is a sort of interesting thought, and then deceived by an apple, which causes her to die. And the dwarves are powerless, but they keep her in a glass box. And then the prince comes along and desires her for her beauty, and he's just going to take her in her coffin because she's so beautiful. It's not creepy, actually, in the original Grimm's telling. And also, if you go watch the old Snow White, it's not creepy at all, which is one of the things that Zegler said, that the prince stalks her. Well, that's not really at all what anybody would have thought before, you know, 2019. So it's very lovely. It's a story of love, but really a deeper story of Snow White's salvation and being raised again from the dead, and to a glory to be a queen in her own kingdom. And all the different interesting characters play a part in that. So it's lovely. And I think the old one, the Disney remake, the original Disney one, is quite beautiful. It is a little bit scary for children. I remember being afraid of it as a child, but, you know, that's part of the excitement, is to encounter a little bit of danger on the screen, because that's how life is, and it's not damaging in any way. And so, yeah, that's how it was before. And now, because I think our culture is so incoherent, we don't really know what we want. We, in a corporate sense, have agreed that we all want something, but many of us don't actually want it, which is, you know, perfect equality in every situation and women ruling the world. Those two assumptions aren't as satisfying, actually, as the old version of love and redemption. And so I find the whole spectacle of this so fascinating and interesting on a cultural level, to see it kind of go down and see a shift like that, where people kind of change their minds mid-course. Really a fascinating thing to observe. I don't think this happens very often.
What I think is fascinating too, just because now we have social media, so we can see the inner workings of controversies in Hollywood, which we probably didn't. I mean, they were probably there, but we couldn't see them, you know, 40, 50 years ago, or even 88 years ago when this film was first done, is that it's almost an irony of her being cast in the film, because as I'm watching this film, and her going on about letting the goodness grow and being kind to all and loving everyone as she sings in the new songs. They did compose some new songs. I just thought it was rather ironic, because one of the things that she was, people were noting on social media is how really mean-spirited she had comments that had nothing to do with the film, just her own political views that she kept spouting on social media, so much so that people from Disney on the producer side had to go, you know, fly across the country to talk to her about it. And so it kind of was off-putting in a way, because I knew about the controversy, and yet here I hear her singing about letting the goodness grow.
That, and I forgot to mention that they recast the word fair. It's not only that they remade the movie and the message of the movie, the word fair, who's the fairest of us all, fair used to mean beautiful, and now fair means equitable. You know, is this fair? Am I getting a fair deal here? And that's kind of a miserable, that cuts against a love story every time. If you're going to worry about what's fair in marriage, for example, you're probably not going to have a very wonderful marriage that lasts very long, because you need to let go of that pretty quick, or you're going to be keeping score, which isn't very nice, actually. It sounds wonderful to have fairness, but at the depths of the soul, what we really want is acceptance and love, not what's coming to us. So, I thought that was kind of funny. They do sing about fairness, and who's the fairest in the kingdom is kind of a little bit vague. Like, obviously the evil queen wants to be more beautiful than Snow White, but then Snow White is worried about everybody getting a fair deal. So they kind of play with that a little bit, but it doesn't work in the way I think that they expect it will. Because I think, again, intuitively, people do understand that two people falling in love with each other isn't an economic, well, many people get married for reasons of economy, economic reasons. But even if they're doing that, they want it to feel like it's true love. And so you don't want to think about the bottom line and redistribution of goods and services, or capitalism, or, you know, socialism, when you're thinking about love. It's kind of interesting that we at least like the illusion of romance, and they didn't want to have that. And so that's another sort of destructive act against their own film, which I thought was really fun, actually, and interesting that they were at sea, it felt like, in terms of messaging and what makes people feel happy when they go to the theater.
You were mentioning a little while ago just about some of the very overt Christian themes, particularly in the original fairy tale, the Grimm's fairy tale. And, you know, some of our listeners, even though they're Christians, they might still like balk a little bit at the idea of some of these fairy tales like Snow White or Rapunzel or Cinderella. They all have this prince that's there to rescue them, kind of thing. So what is a good reason, why should Christians introduce these fairy tales from hundreds of years ago to our children? Because what is positive about them? I think we've let culture somehow make us think that these are really terrible things, that they would somehow in a bad way influence our kids to some kind of stereotypes.
Yes, I mean, I kind of have asked myself that question, you know, why have a lot of these stories fallen out of fashion? And I do think it's because we kind of feel like we live in a different world now, perhaps. But I read these stories to my children when they were very young, these kinds of stories, not much maybe of Grimm itself, but a lot of books that were on that, in that same vein. And it also feels, I think, sort of unpsychological books, stories like this, you know, Snow White doesn't sort of have a deep, rich personality. It's all about visuals, about types, what represents what, and kind of a lot of symbolism. And so the prince who comes in at the end, this is probably why Zegler would think that it was creepy, doesn't have any personality. He's a type. He's a figure. He just appears and saves her. And you think, well, who is he? What's his personality? But the function of the story isn't, and I think children understand this, they're not interested in the psychology of the characters so much the way that an adult would be. They're interested in the shape of the narrative and in symbols. Children are rich, live in a world rich in symbols. And the symbols in most of these stories are deeply Christian. And therefore, for me, I would say very useful, very good for children. So it's not creepy for a prince to ride in at the end who nobody really knows who he is, because you can sort of transfer that idea pretty easily to the return of Christ at the end. You know, we do know and love the Lord while we're here on this earth, but we never see him face to face. He really, in some profound sense, because we don't see him, we can't touch him, we only get his personality through the scriptures, that when he comes again, many, many people will find him a stranger and will not have anticipated him showing up. So the way that the prince comes in many of these stories is, I think, very Christologically wonderful and useful. And it's not troubling to me as a Christian that you don't really get into personality types or individuality. You're really teaching children through the story to rest their existential selves on the images and pictures that are so rich and wonderful. And I think fairy tales are wonderful for children. Elves and fairies, and I have written about how we did Santa with our children. I don't think all of those things are lying to children, because you do it with a wink in your eye, first of all, but also because we know, again, intuitively as human people, that there's a spiritual world that we can't see, and it's governed by the laws of good and evil, and it has rules of its own that we can't violate those. There is a governor who is Christ, who is God, and we participate in that world, but we don't see a lot of things the way they really are. And stories like this unlock that world and show us things that we sort of anticipate, but we're grasping for, but we can't see fully. So I think they're wonderful. And it's sad to me that modern children have to have, you know, stories that completely lack any symbolism, any deeper meaning, that are all about how they need to find their true selves as little people, which is one of the most boring things a person can do, is go looking for themselves. And so I think it's wonderful that this kind of happened, that people have rejected this film, because I hope that it sends some people in Hollywood on a long journey of discovery to find out where they went wrong. How could we be better? How can we do the work?
And I hope that it helps some people who, and because it, as a matter of fact, at the end credits, I can see for all the credits, they credit the Grimm's fairy tales. And so I hope it would cause some people to go back and to revisit those and even see how Hollywood's taken, you know, tales like Hansel and Gretel and made them into like really weird horror films. And just the wonderful way in which I don't know. I think it's full of imagination. It's not meant to create some like Harry Potter world. And I think that's maybe a misunderstanding of what these fairy tales are supposed to be. But there's just so many classic ones that they wrote, like Rumpelstiltskin and even Cinderella. And I think most people have missed the original source material.
For sure. I think it would be so great if enough people got angry and bought all these books and read them out loud to their children as a sort of act of rebellion. I think that would be amazing. I mean, we came home, I think it could happen. We came home from watching this movie, and the first thing my kids did was they watched the Cinderella live action remake, which is actually really wonderful. And then they dug out and read Cinderella or Snow White out loud and a bunch of other fairy tales. And I saw my daughter babysits for someone, and she hauled a big stack of books off our shelf and carried them over and spent the afternoon reading them to our friend's children because she was so angry. So I hope that the backlash produces real curiosity about where these stories came from and why they were so compelling and are so compelling.
Now, there's so much material in Hollywood that is not appropriate for kids. So a lot of times when something like this comes out, you know, Christian families are like, oh, Snow White, I remember that tale. And let's go as a family to see it. Your kid's a little bit older, so maybe they're not going to hate watch it or something. But should Christians take their families and their kids to see this film?
I wouldn't recommend it at all. First of all, I think you would feel sad that you spent the money on something that was not that entertaining. If you really want to find out what it was like, wait until it comes out in some other form, because seeing it in the theater is expensive and that should be saved for something that's really good, I think, just personally. And then even then, I don't see any reason to show it to a young child because it's confusing. It doesn't have narrative coherence. And I think a lack of, you know, okay, so there's no profanity and no, it's not too scary. That's not a good enough reason to show a child something, just because it's unobjectionable on those points. I think your child's mind and soul are precious. And so go watch the original one or watch the Cinderella movie again with I think it was made by Kenneth Branagh. I hope I have his name right. Or really any old movie would be fine, or just don't watch a movie. I don't think it will ruin. If you loved the original one and have nostalgic feelings about it, this will make you angry and sad. And so unless you like to feel that way, you might want to just spare yourself the trouble.
Well, I definitely don't think, as you said, that it's worth the money. And even if you take your family to the matinee, unfortunately, matinees, the discounted price is like $15 a ticket. So it's not that inexpensive, even if you're only taking, like, say, a family of four to see this film. So there's other ways that you can spend your time, or like you said, stream the old stuff. And also, just a caution, I mean, I just feel like Disney in particular, they are trying to redo their classics, but also make them, you know, politically correct, as we'd say, maybe that phrase, just more palatable, maybe, for the modern age. And in doing so, they really are gutting the meaning out of the original source material, which is unfortunate.
They are. I hope that they feel the financial pain of this and reconsider what they're doing. I don't know anything about Disney, so I don't know if that's something that could ever happen. But I mean, I do think that companies exist like this in order to make money. And so they shouldn't get money for it. I mean, a few of us went to see what it was like, but I don't think people are seeing it. And I think that's good. I don't think it's worth I'm sad for theaters that really suffered the day it came out because people really didn't go. And I think normally that would be a really big day for a theater to have a new Disney movie come out. But I think that that's a good and valuable lesson that I hope they learn. But who knows?
Yes, it's doing terrible at the box office. And as you noted, when you went and when I went, I walked in and I was the only person there. And I was seeing it for this podcast. So I don't know that they were definitely hitting their target audience, especially if they were hoping a whole bunch of families would come. And it was at a time where families should have come because I went to a, you know, matinee, in an afternoon showing rather, you know, so it would have been a good time for little kids, but no one was there. Well, now on to a fun question for Anne after our in-depth thoughts about feminism or new female empowerment, Disney and Snow White. It's almost summer, Anne. Would you say that when it comes to kind of like a summer getaway, would you rather go to the ocean and be at the beach, or are you a lake person? You'd rather swim in a lake than the ocean?
I love the ocean. I would go to the ocean every year if I could. That would be my dream, but I have to choose my years to go. So this year it will probably be a lake year, which will be lovely. I live in a gorgeous part of New York, so it's not a real trial to go to the lake, but I do love the years we get all the way to the ocean.
Well, thanks, Anne, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much. This was fun.
You've been listening to episode 440 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy, and we have been talking about the new Disney live-action film, Snow White. You can read Anne's film review for the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called Reimagining Snow White, How Counterfeits Reveal the True. And you can read this for free with no paywall at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org.
You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Handegraff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.